Well, here we are.
How can we love our country and not love our countrymen?
I have really nothing to, how do you answer that?
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills!
Hello, you speak English, sir? Paula Usted English?
All right, people, we're gonna try something a little different today.
We are a nation that has a government, not the other way around.
Don't mess with the bull, young man. You'll get the horns.
I cannot solve your problem, sir. Only you can.
We, as Americans, have the capacity now, as we've had in the past, to do whatever needs to be done to preserve this last and greatest bastion of freedom.
Discussing the issues that actually matter. Finding the answers using logic and reason. KLZ 560 presents Rush to Reason. Now here is your host, John Rush.
All right, hour number two is upon us. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. And by the way, Craig, thanks for reminding me that John Hickenlooper was a senator a few minutes ago, because frankly, until you said that, I had completely spaced that out. And I think even Charlie had as well. We both were like, oh yeah, that guy's a senator. Haven't heard a peep from him since the election last November. So at any rate, Charlie sent me this the other day, by the way. I did a little bit more research on this as well. And I'm going to take a little bit of time to dissect this. And lines are open, by the way. If you want to call in on this or any other topic, feel free. 303-477-5600. You can text us 307-200-8222. So there's an article out and some talk out, by the way, where the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, is pushing for right to repair on things like cell phones, tractors, and other things. Now, let me give you a little background on the automotive side, which these guys are stealing an idea that came from the automotive industry. Charlie, Drive Radio, we were pushing for this some 15 years ago or so, I want to say. And where I'm going with this is the rest of the repair world is now finally catching up to what we in the automotive world were struggling with some 20 years ago. That being, you have to, in the case of an automotive, you know, the automotive industry or cars, we as an aftermarket needed certain access to data, information, programming, and so on to be able to fix late model vehicles. And what we ended up putting together, and there was a lot of even arguing internally in the automotive industry back in these days on, you know, how to approach it, what to do. You know, none of us like government involvement. We all want to try to get these things worked out without having the government be involved. I mean, the last thing you want to do is have them overseeing anything along these lines. You want to be able to work it out on your own. So what the automotive industry did was we came up with a Right to Repair Act. I'd have to look it up, Charlie, to see what year that was. Maybe you can do that for me. Well, it's hard for me to talk and type at the same time. But we came up with the Right to Repair Act. And I want to say it was some 15 years ago or so, Charlie. And what it did was it forced the automakers, the auto manufacturers, to provide data and information into the aftermarket so that we in the aftermarket could still fix new cars after they're out of warranty, of course. And it enabled us to even have access. And by the way, you as individuals have this access as well. You as an individual, if you want the original repair information for your vehicle, make, model, whatever, you have access to that through the OEM, the original equipment manufacturer's websites. That was all part of that Right to Repair Act. And we were able to put all of that together. And again, there was a lot of arguing even inside of the automotive industry as to how to accomplish that. And what I mean by arguing is, there were those of us like myself that don't trust the dealerships and the original equipment manufacturers as far as I can throw them. Sorry, I just don't. I don't trust them at all. There's a few good ones out there. Yes, I get that. And there's some good dealers out there that really believe in the entire industry as a whole. But by and large, I was back in those days pushing and saying that if you think for one second the dealer or the OEM manufacturer, as us in the aftermarket, are your friends, you're crazy. You're Looney Tune, because they're not. They're your enemy. In fact, when I owned my shops back in the day, my number one competitors were the dealers, not other repair shops, not other independent repair shops. They were my nemesis, and I was probably theirs. Doesn't mean you can't figure out ways to get along and work together and so on, but my biggest competitor was the automotive dealerships, new car dealerships. Doesn't mean I hate them. Doesn't mean I don't like them. But I can tell you the inner workings of a dealership, and I can tell you the inner workings of the aftermarket side of it, and I will tell you that it is the goal of the dealership to make sure the aftermarket never sees that car. We're going to talk about, you know, affordable interest mortgage here in a minute, and then Extreme in the next block. You know, it's their goal to make sure that folks like Extreme never see your vehicle. That's the dealership's goal. That's the original equipment manufacturer's goal. That's, you know, Toyota's goal, General Motors' goal, Ford's goal, etc. How does all that apply to this right to repair that the FTC is pushing for now? If all of these companies that are struggling to get the things they need to fix things after a particular product is made, I'm one that says, I don't think that's the FTC's responsibility. Now, the Federal Trade Commission will get involved and they'll probably make this something happen to where it's fair to the consumer. But I'm one to say every trade organization should be getting together and doing this on their own. And if they don't have one, form one and make it happen that way. I don't want the FTC pushing this. I'm just being honest. We didn't get the FTC to push this for us in the automotive world. We figured it out on our own. And it's not perfect. But for those of you listening, because of what we did in the automotive world, you're able to take your 2, 3, 4, 5-year-old vehicle, whatever it is. In fact, the minute it's out of warranty, or frankly, some of you when it's in warranty and you go in to get an oil change and you want the oil change reminder light reset, it's because of that act and what I just mentioned that you can get that done. And it, in a way, it unifies, not the right word. It standardized some things that we in the aftermarket needed to fix vehicles. Now, it doesn't mean it's perfect. And some of the manufacturers, by the way, are awful when it comes to providing the aftermarket with the information they need to fix those vehicles. The more exotic the vehicle, the more awful it is. For example, Land Rover Jaguar, they suck at this. Ask Jeff over at JC's British and 4x4, one of my sponsors on the weekend, he'll tell you the same thing. They stink at this. They do it because they have to, it's the only reason. Some of the other manufacturers are a lot more friendly when it comes to the information they provide and the willingness to work with the aftermarket. But the exotics, you know, BMW, Mercedes, you know, Land Rover, Jaguar, some of those, they're awful to work with. And they do just the bare minimum of what they have to do to make sure that the FTC is not breathing down their neck. Literally. Now, here's what's happened. What we were struggling with some 20 years ago is now happening when it comes to computers, video games, cell phones, even, believe it or not, tractors. John Deere, by the way, being the worst offender of this. If you go buy, as a farmer, a new John Deere tractor, and you have trouble out in the field, even after it's out of warranty, you will be required to get the John Deere local service facility out to your farm or wherever the tractor happens to be, tractor combine, whatever it happens to be. You will have to get them out to your area, pay the service call, pay them to tap into the computer to find out what's wrong, pay them to do any kind of updates, and then off you go, back to farming. That's how the farm world works when you buy John Deere. So much so that the used tractor market, John Deere especially, has grown immensely, to the point where what should not be a very high valued tractor has gone up in value on the used side because of what I just said. Because if it doesn't have all the new crap on it that you have to have John Deere come out and fix, it makes the tractor worth more money. So John Deere really increased the value of an old tractor and de-incentivizing people to buy new because of what I just said. And by the way, they're not going to change their ways. And what they're feeling is, it's our tractor, it's our proprietary information, we need to be the ones fixing it. Now, there are hacks and other things out there that farmers have found, and there's people that have been able to, if you would, you know, backwards engineer, you know, reverse engineer some of the things that are going on, and they're able to tap in and get things done and handled. But again, it's still, it really hinders the farmer's ability to fix something on their own once that item is out of warranty. What the FTC is now coming along and saying is, we want to help with that. We want to regulate this to make sure that all of you have access to said information and can fix things once it's out of warranty. All I'm going to say to those industries is be careful what you ask for. When you have the government setting the rules versus you all as trade organizations getting together and getting together with the manufacturers and coming up with some sort of a compromise between both sides, I'm afraid you might get a lot more than you bargained for. It was interesting when Charlie sent me this and it said right to repair as the headline. I'm like, wait a minute, we've had that in the automotive world for years. What are we talking about here? Literally, that is the same verbiage that was used in the automotive world some 15 plus years ago. Again, you as a consumer do have rights in this country. Unfortunately, we have manufacturers that don't necessarily regard those rights, even the rights of a farmer today when it comes to John Deere, and they have no problem milking that farmer out of whatever they possibly can after the vehicle has run out of warranty or the tractor has run out of warranty. And by the way, it could be a tractor, excavator, loader. I can go down the list. It doesn't just have to be a tractor. It could be any number of items, and even in the construction world when it comes to John Deere. So much so that it makes you wonder, why would you buy a John Deere? Well, in some cases, it's because that's what you buy. And that's what these guys have grown to buy. That's the dealer network they have in their area. And in some cases, they don't have a lot of choice. So I'll talk more about that as soon as we come back. If you have questions or comments on that, feel free to call me. I hope I did a good job of explaining that. 303-477-5600. Kurt Rogers is next. He's going to join us here in about a half an hour is all. If you got a question, though, for Kurt, call direct 720-895-0500.
Can you believe how low rates are staying? Still in the twos. Back in the 40s and the 50s, rates were in the 5 to 6% range. How much longer are you going to wait? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Your home has never been worth more. Take AIM to get that lower rate or shorten your term. Lower your payment and pay thousands less in interest. It's your money. Call 720-895-0500 now. Affordable Interest Mortgage. Locally owned and family operated since 2001. Are you ready for the future financially? Many of our clients have the ability to access their equity for 30 years without raising their payments now. This prepares them for those speed bumps of life. Ask how you can become mortgage safe too. Take AIM, 720-895-0500, where our reputation of putting you first and listening to you is unmatched in Colorado. Call 720-895-0500 now so you can focus on what's important, family. Regulated by DOR, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
Putting reason into your afternoon drive. This is John Rush.
All right, Rush to Reason. Welcome back. KLZ 560. I did look up, by the way, the Right to Repair Act that was in the automotive side of the fence, and it was actually called, it's H.R. 1449. It was finally passed in 2011, so my 15-year mark is pretty close because it took, I'm not exaggerating, 2-3 years to get all of the things worked out to where they could finally get it to where it would even pass in 2011. But it's called the Motor Vehicle Owner Right to Repair Act. So I was correct when I said Right to Repair Act. It's interesting that that's now being used in everything, you know, non-automotive to keep things working. But let me read to you what the automotive world came up with back in 2011. It requires the manufacturer of a motor vehicle sold, leased, or otherwise introduced into U.S. commerce to provide the vehicle owner and service providers all information necessary to diagnose, service, maintain, or repair the vehicle, offer for sale to the vehicle owner or service providers any related tool or equipment. I forgot that part, by the way. So, in other words, we have access to all of the specialty tools that a lot of times the dealers are forced to buy. There's certain things on certain vehicles where you need a particular specialty tool, and it's only sold by the original equipment manufacturer. They have to make that available for sale to us in the aftermarket as well. Number three, provide the information that enables aftermarket tool companies to manufacture tools with the same functional characteristics. It exempts trade secrets so long as the information is not disclosed to authorized dealer or service providers. In other words, when it comes to the scan tool, we talk about that a lot on Drive Radio, all of the information that it takes to build a scan tool to communicate properly with the computer on that vehicle, the manufacturers have to give the aftermarket companies, Snap-on, Alltel, and so on, that information so that they can build a tool that we in the aftermarket can use. So what really needs to happen now in the other realm, John Deere, for example, is they need to come up and just basically steal some of this verbiage that we had, really what they need to do, frankly, this is my opinion, is just take what's here and expand this into everything non-automotive. The exact verbiage works, by the way. It's worked for us in the automotive world since 2011. All they need to do is take the exact verbiage and run it throughout commerce. That's it. They don't need to reinvent the wheel. It's already been done. We in the automotive world did a lot of legwork, if you would, on all of this for all of the other folks now that could be positively affected by this. And literally, all they have to do is take the same exact verbiage and run it to where Apple, John Deere, Google, who makes phones, Samsung, who makes phones. Okay, I can go down the list, folks. It could be a washing machine. Could be anything. Could be your stove. Could be your microwave. Could be, you know, any item that's manufactured that you need to go in and either try to repair yourself or have a repair center repair. That information needs to be made available to those particular companies or you yourself, so that if you're a do-it-yourselfer like I am and you want to fix your stove that you just bought and the circuit board went out and you need to figure out how to diagnose it, you should be able to have all that same access that the appliance dealer locally that sells said appliance has. And again, all they have to do is take what we did in the automotive world and apply it everywhere else. It's really not that difficult. So hopefully the FTC will look back at that and they will look at that Right to Repair Act from 2011 that we in the automotive world did and use that. So when I said 15 years ago, I think we started working on the language and the verbiage of that because we as Drive Radio, believe it or not, we're very involved with a lot of the representatives at the time in a lot of the different states, the Automotive Service Association, which we're very much tied into as well. All of us worked diligently to get these things handled on a federal basis to where this was handled. And again, those are the things that in the automotive world we were able to accomplish. And the same thing now needs to just get passed down into these other worlds as well. Now, I don't know that the rest of them are as organized as we were, and we weren't super organized because there was a lot of infighting even back then as to what we should and shouldn't ask the manufacturers for. There were some good compromises that were made, and it worked. By the way, we talked about that several weeks ago, Andy and I did, when it comes to compromise. I'm afraid we're getting to the point, especially now with, you know, COVID and the vaccines and so on, a lot of things Steve and I talked about last hour. Is there any compromise left? And by the way, that doesn't mean I'm talking about, you know, we reach hands across the aisle and work together. No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, do we have the ability to sit down at a table, not shout and yell at each other, but figure out how do we get from A to B, politically speaking? And a lot of you, even on my side of the fence, the conservative side of the fence, would say, well, you can't sit down and do that. We're just going to do our thing. No. You don't get what you want when you have that attitude. You have to be able to sit down and work things out. My fear is, we've lost that in this country. How do we get that back? I'm going to talk to Liz Mayer maybe about that in just one moment and bring the same thing up to her and say, how do we get some of that back? Because frankly, I don't see much of that happening. Both sides are going to say it's either my way or the highway. And that doesn't get us where we need to go, by the way. All right. I did want to talk yesterday about this, and I did it a little bit in our last hour with Scott Garless. But I am going to boast. There were those on YouTube, TikTok, other places talking about how the used car market was going to crash any day. This was a month ago. Watch out, it's going to crash. The used car value that, you know, that vehicle you just purchased from the used car dealer or the dealership themselves is going to really, really drop in value in several weeks, and you made a huge mistake buying that used car. You should have waited. No, that didn't happen. Frankly, it's not going to happen. In fact, there's an article out in Edmunds, who's a leader in the automotive journalistic world. There's an article out right now. In fact, Bob, one of our great listeners, sent this to me. So, Bob, thanks. Article's titled, "Is Your Clunker Worth Some Serious Cash?" Vehicles with more than 100,000 miles command record high prices in June, according to Edmunds. So, car owners with older high mileage vehicles sitting in their driveway might be a bit shocked to see how much their vehicle is worth right now, this article says. According to the car shopping experts at Edmunds, the average transaction price for all vehicles sold to dealerships with mileage between 100,000 to 110,000 miles climbed to $16,049 in June of 2021 compared to $12,626 last year. So that's a 31% year-over-year increase in the used car value of a vehicle with 100,000 to 110,000 miles. Folks, this is not any different than what I've been telling you now for several months. And I mentioned this yesterday. Some of you may or may not have caught it, but you know, being a fleet customer of Ram, Stellantis now is the parent company of Ram and Jeep and Chrysler and Dodge and Fiat and so on, Peugeot. I was invited to watch their presentation on their entire fleet of vehicles from the the Chrysler side of the fence, which used to be Chrysler. So I watched it. I skipped through a few parts of it, but I, for the most part, watched the whole thing. It was about an hour-long presentation. And I particularly stopped at one point where they were talking about chips. And the head of fleet services came on and said, listen, yes, there's a chip shortage. It's real. We're doing our best to work through it. We're going to do our best for you as fleet customers to at least deliver the vehicles you need to keep your fleet running. But essentially, he said there's no guarantees. In fact, what he said was, we could easily see the chip shortage lasting through quarter two of 2022. So folks, quarter one is January, February, March. Second quarter is April, May, June, which we just got done with quarter number two, for those of you that know how quarters work. So what he's saying is we could literally see the chip shortage lasting through this time next year. What does that mean for new cars and used cars? They're still going to be in tight demand until we start getting enough chips to where they can actually supply vehicles, put them on the line, and send them to the dealers, which then goes to the customer. There's articles out, where Ford is contemplating, which I know why they're going to do this, but they're contemplating moving the vehicles that are now in storage across the country, typically not far from where the F-150s are made, but they're talking about taking F-150s that can't be completed, sticking them on transport trucks or trains, delivering them to the dealership that have them on order, and then once everything comes in to finish the vehicle, let the dealership do it. The dealers, by the way, are not in favor of this because this means that once it hits their lot, they're responsible for that vehicle insurance-wise and so on. So what Ford's trying to do is get that out of their liability column and put it into the dealer. Not dumb on Ford's part, but frankly, as a dealer, I wouldn't accept them. Vehicle's not complete. Why would I accept that? And by the way, for everybody that maybe doesn't know this, warranty pay in a dealership is not the same as what you as a customer pay the dealership. I'm going to repeat that. Warranty pay, the original equipment manufacturer pay, so in this case, what Ford pays the dealer to complete said item, putting a chip in, an ECM in, whatever it happens to be, is not the same rate that you as a customer pay. I think a lot of folks have misconceptions there that, you know, warranty pay is the same as we call it customer pay in that world. No, they're vastly different. In some cases, it could be as much as a third or half as much as what you as a customer would pay. Why is that? It's just a contractual thing that they've got worked out internally between the dealer and the manufacturer, and that is true across the board, folks. Across the board. It's not just Ford. It's Ford, Toyota, General Motors, on down the line we go. So I want to make sure I got that out there because, in essence, what's going to happen here is the dealers are going to take it in the shorts, quote unquote, to have these vehicles on their lot and then have to finish them. I would not, if I was a dealer, I wouldn't accept it. I'd say, sorry, Ford, you deliver me a completed vehicle or I don't want it. Now, most dealers will take it because they want the inventory. They want the ability to make it look like the lot's full. On and on we go. So most dealers will probably take it. I don't know if that's a good move on their part or not, but they will. I wouldn't. I wouldn't want the liability because we're talking, in some cases, you could still have that vehicle sit on your lot for the next 8 to 10 weeks before you get the parts necessary to finish it. Maybe longer. What if there's a hailstorm? Now you've got to have that vehicle insured. You've got to pay the claim, the deductible, and so on the hailstorm that just came in for the damage that's on that vehicle that, frankly, you can't sell because it can't even be completed yet. I think this is nuts on Ford's part, but it's a wise move. They're trying to get this off of their own balance sheet out into the dealerships. They're not stupid, but I don't agree with it. So anyways, point being, the used car market's not crashing, folks. We're going to talk to Kurt Rogers at the top of the hour, just like the housing market's not crashing. So don't let anybody out there tell you that the used car market is going down. If anything, it might even go up more from where it is right now, because frankly, you can't buy new or used product right now. There's some used product that's sky high. There is no new product unless it's some unique vehicle that nobody else wants or it's very high priced. One last story. I don't know. I fish around for stuff all the time. Charlie knows me. I'm weird. I'm a car guy. I'm always fishing around for things. So the new TRX from Dodge is out. And the TRX, I've reviewed it here on the program. It's a 707 or 702 horsepower V8, 6.4 liter hot rod truck, essentially. Runs like no tomorrow, like a scalded dog. The thing is awesome. They finally have hit the streets. The average dealership is getting $15,000 to $20,000 above sticker price for that truck. So, again, if you find some of these vehicles around, you are not going to buy them for wholesale. You're not going to probably buy them at sticker. In most cases, you're going to pay above sticker unless it's some oddity vehicle that no one wants. I'm being honest. So, again, all of that has an effect on your used car price. And, no, they're not crashing. All right, Golden Eagle Financial is up next, Al Smith. And when it comes to all the things that I'm talking about, this is where Al comes in and helps you plan ahead, financially speaking, for retirement. He'll take all these different things, inflation and so on, and determine what it is you need to be doing down the road for your own retirement. Give him a call today, 303-744-1128, or find him at klzradio.com.
Give your retirement plan a stress test so that circumstances outside your control, like inflation, won't damage your standard of living. Chartered financial consultant and founder of Golden Eagle Financial, Al Smith, gives you the peace of mind that your money will last. Let's say you need about $4,000 a month to live comfortably in retirement. Then suppose inflation averages 2.5%. In 15 years, you'll need $5,800 a month to maintain your purchasing power. Al will show you how to reinvest a portion of your nest egg into alternative tax-free accounts to create even more guaranteed income in retirement. Create a retirement plan that will hold up against the Golden Eagle stress test for a more comfortable retirement. Schedule a free, no-obligation consultation now at klzradio.com/money. Confidence through planning. Advisory services offered through Foundations Investment Advisors, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
All right, folks, talking about vehicles, keeping your vehicle lasting as long as possible. Frankly, in a lot of cases, you don't have any choice because replacing that vehicle is going to get tougher and tougher in the next 6 months to a year. So the reality is keep what you own running, and you can do that by going to Extreme out in Parker. They'll take care of you. You can go to klzradio.com and get some wiper blades free. Just fill out the form there. And again, that's at klzradio.com. Call direct, 303-841-1071. Full bumper-to-bumper service, including tires at cost. That's Extreme Auto Repair.
Thanks for restoring my faith in humanity. No more hopping from one mechanic to another trying to find a solution for your vehicle's persistent issue. Extreme Auto Repair has a reputation for fixing problems quickly. You bring your Nissan to the dealer because of a rattling noise. They charge you $4,000. You still hear the noise. You bring the same vehicle to Extreme Auto Repair in Parker, where Sean and his team quickly discover a broken bolt in the subframe, a known Nissan failure they have seen many times before. Real stories like this one earn Extreme Auto Repair customers for life. As one woman exclaims in a recent 5-star review, "Thanks for restoring my faith in humanity." The factory-trained technicians at Extreme Auto Repair stay up to date with the manufacturer data for your vehicle's specific make and model for quick, experienced problem solving. klzradio.com/extreme.
Hi, this is Richard Beatty with KLZ Radio. You are a mentor, a father, a pastor, and a friend. People look to you for answers when they struggle online. We'll send you free resources to improve your serve. Fill out the form klzradio/accountable.
Stay up to date with Rush to Reason after the show on Twitter at Rush to Reason and on Facebook.com/Rush to Reason.
All right, Dan in Blackhawk is with us next. Dan, what's going on, sir?
Not much. How are you doing?
Good, sir.
Last hour and what you just talked about used cars. I've got 285 Nissans that I've been working on. One's got 70,000 miles on it, no rust. It's going to be running here, and I'm going to get top dollar out of it because of the car market.
Yep.
It's in perfect condition. The other one's got 435,000 miles on it, but I've done so much maintenance on it that whoever gets it is going to have a reliable car for the next 2 years, I would say, at least.
Nice.
I just got tired of it because I'm tired of working on them, and it's harder and harder for me to get parts for them.
Yeah.
So I ended up buying a newer Nissan 2008, and Gino's just looked at it, and I got a crack in the catalytic converter pipe, so $1,300 thanks to our illustrious governor.
Yep, yeah, we already talked about that plenty on the weekend, so yeah, you know why.
So, yeah, and then so I called Wyoming, a shop up in Wyoming, to see if they'll do it for me and see what the price will be. And then also regarding the vaccines and the mandates that these companies are going to be putting on employees with the vaccines, where's the ACLU in all this?
I haven't heard a peep from them. OSHA, by the way? I haven't heard a peep from either one of them.
Well, I'm being kind of sarcastic because the ACLU is a liberal organization.
Right.
And they claim that they care about our civil liberties, but they don't. All they care about is making money for themselves.
Correct.
And you talked about some trial lawyers, and I was thinking class action lawsuits also. So
yeah, I will tell you, Dan, I think, you know, this isn't really that hard of a prediction. If employers go down that path of forcing vaccines on employees and that employee has any kind of an adverse reaction to vaccine now or 5 years from now, yeah, there will be lawsuits. I think it's really stupid on the part of an employer to require this, frankly. I think it's suicide. And I don't know who's advising these folks. They're dumb. You still there, Dan? Did I lose you? I think I lost Dan. Dan, I appreciate that very much and getting us on track there. Let's jump over to Liz Mayer joining us now. I said I was going to talk to her in just a few minutes, so here she is. Liz, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing very good. And you heard our talk there just a moment ago, and there's talk of different hospitals even around the country requiring their employees to be vaccinated. And Liz, no matter where you lie when it comes to vaccines, whether you believe in them, don't believe in them, as an employer, I don't know why you would be dumb enough to do something like that. Really, what you're doing is forcing something health-related onto an employee. I think that's just stupid.
Well, I think that the hospitals are in a really tough bind on this, right? Because they don't want to end up in a situation where they potentially accrue liability, because if they have somebody on staff who hasn't been vaccinated, who then is a carrier and transmits it to a patient, this is one of the things that
these guys are smart enough to know this. There's no guarantee if you're vaccinated, you're not going to do that anyway. So that's again, that doesn't hold water.
I think where it probably holds water is that we're finding that the vaccines are not 100% effective in terms of preventing contracting COVID. But 97% of the hospitalizations are amongst people who haven't been vaccinated, right? So I think, and the problem with this is if you look at the U.S. legal system, even if something doesn't hold water, it doesn't prevent somebody from launching a nuisance lawsuit,
true,
right? And so I think there are two things that are interesting to consider here. One, if at the outset of COVID, when we were doing all these relief packages, if we had actually done some limitation of liability measures,
I think
we might be in a different position.
You and I are on the same page there. Why we did not do some of that early on is beyond me. And Trump was in office then and could have.
He could have. He absolutely could have. And I know that that's something that Mitch McConnell in particular would have been very enthusiastic about and probably would have actually done a lot to get over the finish line. But it didn't happen. And that is a frustration because I know, restaurants have been concerned. Are they going to get hit with some junk lawsuit if somebody does open?
Liz, I think a lot of businesses, even we here in broadcasting were concerned with some of that and why we had some of the rules we had inside of our own organization for as long as we did. Because anytime you've got people coming and going and there's a risk factor and a sue factor and so on, yes, you are correct. We could have eliminated a lot of that and probably changed even how we opened things back up economically and done it sooner had we had done some of that.
I 100% think that's true. So I think that's one point. I think the other point, though, is, yeah, there are ways of limiting that liability that don't necessarily depend on vaccines. But what you're seeing, I don't know that we're going to see much of a better response to it politically, because the sort of less intrusive measures seem to be being spearheaded by none other than New York City's Mayor Bill de Blasio, who
right.
is probably my least favorite politician
yep.
in this entire country.
Yep.
Really terrible. And I think that means that even if he's suggesting something that theoretically should fly better with people who are a little bit concerned about getting the vaccine, maybe don't want to do it quite yet, don't want to be subjected to a mandate, the fact that he's the one doing the sales job on it, I think, is going to be a real problem. And I think it's actually going to push people towards vaccine mandates, as opposed to what he's saying is, either if you're a healthcare worker, you either get the vaccine or you get a mandatory COVID test once a week. There are people who I think would take that.
If I was a healthcare worker, that's what I would do, because I don't want the vaccine. To me, there's just enough red flags about it that, you know, I don't want that in my body. I've been able to handle things through COVID all the way up to this point. I don't need it. I've traveled. I've been in and out of the country. I don't need it. I would be the one that would actually take a COVID test to prove I don't have it to keep working.
So I suspect possibly if you were working in an emergency room, you might have a slightly different view on Well, then if not, if you were in New York City, you would have a structure in place that would be more accommodating. But I just worry that he's the one that goes out and does the sales job on this. And
that
then
guy shouldn't
got,
be selling
you know,
anything.
Like, no. In fact, I found it fascinating during the New York City Democratic mayoral primary. I had Democratic consultant friends who were actively saying, oh, my God, please just don't let Bill de Blasio say anything good about our candidate. I mean, that's really how bad he it's and bad. The whole situation.
Because his image is such crap right now, Liz. Again, that guy, he should be John Hickenlooper, and you shouldn't hear from him.
Yeah, I mean, actually, in some respects, if people really wanted to convince folks who are hesitant about getting the vaccine to go do it, what they probably should do is put Bill de Blasio on TV and have him, like, rant his way through a press conference about how vaccines are super unsafe and nobody should ever get them.
Yeah, then they would go get
and
them.
And then people... And then, that'd be like one thing that would get people kind of, over the hump on this. But
here's my thought real quick too on this. And I don't know where you are on this side of the fence at all. But frankly, I think at least here in Colorado, I'm one that says, Liz, that which they're doing now, unfortunately, they're paying people now to get a vaccine, which is really ticking a lot of people off. But frankly, I think we're at whatever saturation level we're at is where we're going to be, and I don't see that changing. Again, it's a done deal at this point. They can try to convince people to do any number of things after this, but I think it's a done deal. Whoever's got it has it, and whoever doesn't.
Yeah, I think the numbers are not going to move very much from this.
They're not going to change.
If they come out with something that's for under 12, then we'll see how people respond to that. That may move the numbers. But, yeah, I mean, look, Colorado has a pretty high vaccination rate. I'm
53%.
Sitting here in Connecticut that has – Right. Well, in Connecticut, we have, I think, one of the top three vaccination rates in the country. I did get vaccinated. I got the Pfizer. I didn't really have. I had a little bit, like, I felt really tired for a couple of days. One night, I got, like, very sweaty at night. But other than that, I didn't really have anything. I also know that there are people who have had the Moderna and have had a little bit more of that. So, I think if people are able to be selective and choose between them, if that's something that's important to them, that might encourage some people to maybe get it also. But, bottom line, in Connecticut, I think we're at something like, of everybody who's eligible to get the vaccine, I think we're at like 80%, maybe above, of that population. So realistically, at this point, all around my house, they've got free walk-up COVID vaccination sites. And maybe that's going to help with, like, the person who's working three jobs and just really hasn't been able to
fit it hasn't
in.
Here. We've got the same thing here. In fact, there's one next to our station here that Charlie and I have been watching that, frankly, Liz, no one's entering it.
No one's going to it.
No. Nope.
Yeah, the ones around here, I've seen one that's down in a park where I've seen a few people trickle into it. But, I don't think that they're probably going to move the numbers much beyond this point. I do wonder as we get closer to fall and cold and flu season and people are thinking more about a variety of illnesses, and as we've got more months and, more proof points on this, maybe some people will be more comfortable with it. But, I certainly think for a lot of people who are vaccine hesitant, particularly in states that do have very high rates of vaccination, it's going to be hard to persuade them to do it at this point because they're going to assess that the risk factor, you know, it's not like they're walking around someplace where only like 30% of eligible people are vaccinated, right? I mean, just the risk profile does look different. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But again, I mean, I think what Bill de Blasio has suggested is actually probably a pretty rational solution to this, much as it pains me to say it. But I don't know. I really wish that they could have gotten, you know, I don't know. Like,
well, but, you know, and that leads kind of into the
maybe
next.
Maybe the Republican doctors who are in Congress, maybe if they had put that out there, maybe this would be selling better.
Well, and this kind of leads into the next topic, which is, you know, what does the Democrat Party need to do to change the way it's communicating with people? Because the reality, Liz, as you and I both know right now, they are failing on all fronts almost daily and are really struggling in that area. And if they don't get things handled, my prediction is they're going to have a big a toe stub come 2022.
Yeah, well, so let me tell you, with regard specifically to vaccine stuff, something interesting that I've observed is I've got a friend who works for one of the major health systems in California that's been hitting really high vaccination numbers. And one of the things that they noticed a while back was that they were struggling with the Russian-American community. They're in a part of California where there are a lot of Russian-Americans. And historically, not surprisingly, a lot of Russian-Americans are very skeptical of anything that comes out that's expedited or the government's pushing whatever. I mean, you know, we all understand why that would be historically. Well, one of the things that they did was rather than, you know, just having a bunch of, like, English-speaking people, like, browbeating everybody or trying to shame people, is they actually found native Russian-speaker health workers who were part of their system and sent them out to talk to people in Russian. And that worked very well in terms of getting people to agree to do it and not be so worried about it. And I keep hoping that, you know, since that's been done in a pretty democratic state, pretty democratic area, that maybe somebody's going to communicate that to, you know, the powers that be, because I think there's a lot more focus right now on shaming people than trying to get
and that didn't work.
Like if you can get somebody who's actually like the target person to go talk to them about something, that's a lot more persuasive, right? Like that's how you do grassroots work and organizing in politics. But that's not really what's happening. And I think that's a real issue, and I think it's probably a missed opportunity, and it's too bad because they actually have this really good case study that is applicable, and clearly they have, like, you know, Republican members of Congress who are doctors who have demonstrated a willingness to do that, but there's not a lot of seizing on that. And, of course, there's still a lot of deploying of Anthony Fauci, who, you know, I'm not necessarily the world's biggest Fauci hater, but I also
I am. That guy ought to be behind bars. You're talking to a guy that can't stand him. That guy's criminal and ought to be in prison, Liz, literally.
The bottom line that I come down to with this is that there's going to be a trust deficit if he's the one that you're sending out, because I remember very well at the start of all this, he was on TV saying, oh, no, you don't need to wear masks. And I'm like, if you don't need to wear masks, why is it that every time there's an outbreak of something that is SARS-like disease in Asia, everybody in Asia puts on a mask? Like, you can't convince me that the entire continent, especially in a country like Japan, where there are, like, pretty high educational levels and people who are very scientifically educated, you can't convince me that, like, the entire continent is just stupid, right? Like, there's got to be a reason for it. And, yeah, lo and behold, it turns out, you know, there was a reason. So, I mean, that's just a basic problem that I think a lot of people are going to have with him as a messenger, whether they feel like you, whether they feel like me.
There's a few people that love him, but, yeah, he cannot be the messenger. Frankly, Liz, I don't know how he stays in charge of what he's doing right now moving forward. The Democrats, of course, Biden will keep him there, but I think that's actually very unwise on their part because this guy's losing credibility by the day. Anytime he gets in front of Rand Paul, he loses more credibility.
Well, that's the other thing, is I would say, having worked for Rand Paul and knowing how Rand Paul gets and how stubborn he is, I mean, if I were advising Anthony Fauci, I would tell him to knock it off immediately because, I mean, once Rand Paul senses that there's somebody who's being obstinate, difficult, not being honest with him, I mean, Anthony Fauci should really call Jim Clapper and ask him how that went because, you know, Jim Clapper has been dogged to this day with allegations that he should have brought up on federal perjury charges, all entirely because he pissed off Rand Paul. And, you know, frankly, in my opinion, he totally perjured himself. So, yeah,
you're right about that. If Fauci continues to go down this path, he's going to be in the same boat. Frankly, I think he already is, just my own opinion. I think he's already there.
I don't think he's doing himself a lot of favors. And I think that if the administration was looking for somebody more effective to be speaking out on this, I mean, probably, first of all, having somebody who's outside the administration would be better. But for my money, I get more useful information when I see Scott Gottlieb going on CNBC. I get more useful information, frankly, out of Sanjay Gupta. So in some respects, I mean, getting Fauci sort of out of the limelight and sort of letting it sit with those guys who are already on TV plenty, that might actually be a better solution for the administration. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not an idiot.
I'm not in charge.
It's not my problem. I'm not in charge. And we just sit here and observe things and comment on them, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. You got it. Liz, and again, thanks for putting the book review together yesterday as well. That went really well.
Thank
I enjoyed it. It was great.
Thank you for interviewing Mike. He is one of my oldest friends in Republican politics. He actually, when I moved back to this country in 2006, he was the chairman of the Arlington Falls Church Young Republicans and recruited me to take over the Arlington Falls Church Young Republicans from him.
Nice. So it was great.
It's
we enjoyed it.
To be able to work with him again.
No, it was great.
I hope people buy the book, check it out. Even my mom, who is not a big debt hawk and is significantly to the left of me, is reading it and enjoys it. And
awesome.
It's really well written. And she has an English degree. So at the end of the day, she's a tough critic. So,
Good. That's good to know.
Thank you so much.
Liz, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And that interview was yesterday, The Debt Bomb. You can check that out on yesterday's program as well. And buy the book, by the way, Debt Bomb. American National Insurance is up next. Paul Leuenberger. Again, folks, he's got a different way of insuring really everything that you drive and own, especially those of you that have some classic cars and do some different things along those lines, you know, like myself. He's got things that he can do that, frankly, no other insurance company can. Call him today, 303-662-0789.
Paul Leuenberger with American National Insurance offers a rebate program unlike any other. Every year that you don't file a claim, you get a certain percentage of your money back. Just one example of how Paul Leuenberger, the personal insurance agent of John Rush, keeps your rates so low. He rewards his customers for their diligence and responsibility. Paul can also help you strategize about when to file a claim and when to pay out of pocket so you save more money in the long run. You don't want to shop online for insurance because you have no idea what you're buying. You need Paul Leuenberger with American National, the No Surprises Insurance Agent. Call 303-662-0789. That's 303-662-0789. And ask Paul Leuenberger with American National Insurance for details about his unique rebate program for home and auto insurance. Talk to somebody with the expertise to advise you so you get the coverage you expect.
All right, RoofMax is up next, folks. And again, there is hail prevention you can do with your roof. That's called RoofMax. They can coat your roof, treat it, get it back up to really original specifications is what I should say there. And Dave can explain that better than I. He's even got some sample shingles he can bring along. But bottom line is get your roof inspected today. Find out what he can do for you. Find out how much money he can save you at the same time. And just call him, 303-710-6916.
RoofMax is the fountain of life for your roof and will bring your shingles back to life. The natural oils in the asphalt protect your roof as weather and temperature cause the material to expand and contract daily. This oil gradually evaporates over time, causing your shingles to dry out and lose their flexibility. You may start to see your shingles cracking, breaking, streaking, and curling. Granules may begin flaking off. RoofMax could reverse minor curling, cracking, and granule loss to make your shingles like new again. The water-soluble plant-based treatment extends the life of your roof by at least 5 years, guaranteed. Call Dave Hart now for a free assessment of your asphalt shingles, 303-710-6916. He will go anywhere from the eastern slope to the eastern Colorado border and from Cheyenne to the southern border. Mention Rush to Reason for $100 off your treatment. 303-710-6916. John Rush will save you money. You hesitate to hire a business coach because you think you can't afford it, but John earns his wages the first year through tax savings alone. He's not an accountant, but he's been in business for himself since 1986 and has learned the hard way. By making mistakes and spending too much money on taxes instead of taking full advantage of the tax code. These aren't loopholes. These are legitimate savings built into the tax code that your accountant may not tell you about. For example, vehicles with a GVWR of 6,001 pounds can be completely written off as a business expense. That means you could purchase a truck or SUV for your business anytime from now to December 31, 2021, and reduce your tax liability for the entire year. Those are dollars you won't have to pay taxes on now. That could mean the difference between taking your family on a vacation or not. Hiring John today will save you thousands. Email John at rushtoreason.com.
You don't care about kids. A petitioner canvasser chastised my friend when she refused to sign the petition to get Initiative 25, LEAP, the Learning Enrichment and Academic Progress Program, on the November 2021 ballot. If you really care about kids, decline to sign. Kim Munson here. Friday, author and blogger at toadvancefreedom.com, Rick Turnquist shares his thoughts on LEAP. Entrepreneur and owner of Castlegate Knife and Tool, Hal Van Herke, updates us on the latest affecting small business in Colorado. That's Friday, 6 to 7 a.m., 1 to 2 p.m., again, 10 to 11 p.m., right here on KLZ 560 and KLZ 100.7 FM.
Keep freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion alive by contributing to support The Kim Munson Show at KimMunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.
Now back to Rush to Reason on KLZ 560.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. One thing I haven't talked much about, and maybe Andy and I will get into this a little bit more tomorrow, and that is Elitch Gardens has a new youth supervision policy, and it's making a lot of parents upset. And what it is if you're under the age of, I believe, 15, you cannot be there alone without adult supervision. What's happened is they're trying to get rid of the riffraff and things that are happening inside of amusement park. So you have to be over the age of 15 or be accompanied by a chaperone that's over the age of 21. That begins at 3 p.m., by the way. This isn't earlier in the day. That's at 3 p.m. And that also means that kids at 3 p.m., 16 to 17, have to be accompanied by an adult 17 or older. It's something, again, that frustrates a lot of folks. Andy and I may talk about it tomorrow. I've got different thoughts on this probably than those parents do. We'll try to do that tomorrow. Up next, Kurt Rogers joining me from Affordable Interest Mortgage. Don't go anywhere. Hour 3 is next. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560.